Well, my guest tonight at the big table has a big job. He was just elected to be the new president of the Chicago Fraternal Order of Police, Lodge Number 7. Kevin Graham is a police officer who ran against Dean Angelo on a platform that police and their issues weren't being heard. Police officers seemed to agree, voted Graham to represent them not only to the media, but in negotiations for a new police contract. The current one expires at the end of June. There's a lot to talk about when it comes to Chicago police. In the last 18 months, the city was rocked by police shootings, including the shooting death of Laquan McDonald, a shooting that spurred murder charges in against the officer Jason Van Dyke. Not to mention a movement from the mayor's office to reform police strategy and tactics, and a report from the Department of Justice pointing out issues in the way policing is done here in the city of Chicago. Kevin Graham, a 21-year veteran on the force, in addition to 10 years in the suburbs, is my guest tonight at the big table. Mr. Graham, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's first talk about the police contract.
Okay.
Let me start right there because, you know, I didn't realize it's coming up quick here when it comes to expiration. And you know, reading into the history of the police contract, I mean, it takes months and years sometimes of negotiating. Are you looking forward to this challenge, the challenge of being able to negotiate a police contract for the first time?
Yes, I am looking forward to negotiating the contract and getting down to the table. I have had some experience prior to my election as Lodge 7 president. I was the State Lodge first vice president out of Springfield. I've had some experience in the past with our contracts, including being the chairman of the work schedule, and the current work schedule that we are working in the Chicago mm-hmm. Police Department was the one that we came up with and pushed forward two contracts ago, and I think it's working pretty well. It's a big change. It was the first major change in our work schedule in almost 50 years. There's a lot to do. There's a lot to prepare for in everything you're asking for. Certainly, we are looking to be treated fairly. I think that when people look at the police department, they want to be treated fairly. And in order to accomplish that goal, we need to be treated fairly as well.
When you think of a police contract, there's going to be issues, like you just mentioned, work schedule, health care, pay always come in. And then on the other side, there's disciplinary measures.
Sure.
Reform. We've been heard a lot about reform. There seems to be a lot of factors from the outside, editorials at the newspapers, pundits, critics, even the mayor's office, that suggest that there need to be changes in the police contract in the way that officers are disciplined and the way that strategies and tactics are implemented. Do you agree with that?
No. That's the simple answer. The longer answer is that a lot of the problems that have occurred are because of, low manpower. When you have, I worked in the 23rd District, which is now combined with the 19th District and is called the 19th District. When that was combined, beats were made larger, beats were eliminated. This makes it more difficult for you to get from one end of the district to the other to respond to calls, and often your backup is farther away. Now you're faced with the problem with not having enough officers, so then you are forced to use more force than you like to subdue someone simply because you don't have the manpower. And those are all things that have led to problems in the police department. They weren't started by the policemen working in the beat car. And that's where they want to aim things. They want to have people. One of the things that I've been told the city wants is that they don't want people to sign complaints, affidavits, when they complain about police officers. And I have said repeatedly, if you had somebody committing a crime and there is no signed complaint, mm-hmm. that arrest goes nowhere. Certainly, we as police officers want the same thing. We want to be able to be treated fairly and face our accusers. I think that's a basic point.
And it's interesting, too, to look at the history of police contracts and the sort of give and take in the verbiage and the change in language. But there has been a central focus on that idea, the idea of how you complain about police officers and how that sort of plays out. Is it anonymous? Is it written? For years, for decades, different mayors, different leaders of the Fraternal Order of Police. Why do you think that is?
I think that there's a lot of criminals that complain about the police. People don't want to go to jail. People resist arrest, which also leads to most of your problems. I think one key element that is not talked about and should be talked about is that people do not have the right to resist arrest. And that leads to some problems. Certainly, the police department is always training. We could always look at new ways of doing things. We also need to tell the public what their responsibilities are when they're dealing with the public, with dealing with the police. And that has not been done. I think there is a lot of pressure on many politicians to say, let's blame the police. They're our employees, and we can lump all the problems on them. That's not fair.
I mean, it goes back to this idea of fairness. But what I think about when you think of people who do want to question the clauses in the contract about affidavits and the things that we're talking about, community members and others that say there's a systemic problem where police will overstep bounds with no accountability in the way. I mean, the idea being that there's no way to actually keep. To have any sort of recourse to a police officer who goes above and beyond the law and does something that takes away civil rights. How do you answer to that? I mean, that's I think what they're trying to say. So in a police contract, how do you maneuver that? How do you negotiate that kind of thing?
First of all, I don't see that in the police department. I see police officers doing their job, doing an upstanding job every day. Mistakes can happen. I'm the first one to say, you know, once in a while we do make mistakes. We have a very good police department, but there's a narrative going around that somehow we're all out of control. That couldn't be farther from the truth. We have sergeants that check on us constantly. We have lieutenants that check on the sergeants. The captain is overseeing those. There are layers and layers of administration in a police department that do their very best and do a very good job in making sure that we are doing exactly what we're doing. And I think one of the things people are going to find, although I'm not a big fan of the body cameras, I think that needs to be negotiated. One of the things that they are finding is the police are telling exactly the truth, that what is going on those body cameras is exactly what the police officers say.
Kevin Graham is the president of Fraternal Order of Police, Chicago Fraternal Order of Police, Lodge Number 7. He's my guest tonight. We're talking about all things police. We got a lot to talk about still. I'd love to talk about police reform. We've had this conversation, seems ad nauseum, for a year plus, whether it be reform proposals from the city or the Department of Justice and the federal government. We'll talk about that coming up here after the break. Kevin Graham, my guest. Thanks for being here. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, Kevin Graham. He's the president of the Fraternal Order of Police, Lodge Number 7 here in Chicago. Of course, just won the election, become the president. He will be overseeing the negotiation for the police contract, which expires here in the city coming up at the end of June. A lot has been talked about when it comes to police reforms. And we're going to have the conversation about two different things. I mean, we saw that the city sort of have their own investigation, Lori Lightfoot, and there was a lot that went into what the investigation into the relationship between police and community. And then at the same time, we saw with the different previous administration, the Department of Justice have a long-standing, year-long report on some of the systemic problems that the police department has with the community. Let me ask you, what do you think of those? Why don't we start with the Department of Justice? What do you think of that report? Are there merits in that report? Was that report at all accurate in your mind? Is it something we're going to move forward in the changes that they recommend?
Well, certainly that's up to the Justice Department as to whether or not they enter into a consent decree. I would say that the majority of the report I disagreed with. There were some things that held true. We certainly need to have better community relations. And I have always said this. We need to have more foot officers who are communicating well with the public. I certainly walked a beat on Wilson Avenue in Uptown, and I can tell you, people always talk to me. They told me what was going on for 24 hours, what was going to happen, what did happen, who to look for, where to find articles that the detectives may be looking for, and that was because they knew me. They knew me, they knew that I would be there tomorrow and the next day, and that I had an investment in that community. And we need to be constantly communicating with the public, which hasn't been done in the last few years. We've been pulling away from that. I think part of that is manpower, and part of that is we are so focused on numbers, on how many contact cards, how many arrests, how many misdemeanors, how many guns did you get off the street? And that's not necessarily the measure of an effective police department. That's a measure, but not necessarily what the public wants and what the police want to provide.
Do you feel that standards and measurements are the issue when it comes to whether or not you're complying to being a better police department?
Well, I can tell you this. One of our problems is the limitation, and this was mentioned in the Justice Department report, was that police officers are not getting enough time off. Certainly this weekend, they are canceling people's days off. When do you spend time with your family? And that you have to invest in the officer as well. If you're going to keep them working 6-7 days a week, I'm going to tell you there's going to be another side to that. There's got to be a give and take. And so I think a lot of the things in the Justice Department report that benefit the officers are not being addressed. I think there are things that they can say, see, we're going to crack down on people. And those things are being addressed. And some of those things are, I don't think have a lot of merit. I think what has happened is that the Justice Department came in with a script and virtually the same script that they've had elsewhere in the country. And they simply were going out trying to find statements that would fit.
Yeah, you said before that you felt it was politically motivated.
Yes.
I mean, I understand that there was an administration that may have been more interested in the community's input and things of that nature. But what's the political motivation of coming in and trying to have an investigation into a city's police department?
Well, the first thing is we've already talked about it, and that's the contract coming up. And that if they have enough political support, then they can use that to say, oh, we need changes in the contract, without having a give and take for those. And I think a lot of people don't realize that every time we got something in that contract, we had to give something up. Whether it was pay, whether it was vacation, whether it was medical time, whatever it was, those protections in that contract were hard fought.
Now I don't hear the media talking about that.
I don't either.
But I mean, that's a point. I mean, that the storyline for police officers and the police department has been, we're in compliance. Okay, you know, you've been doing this systemic problems. You never hear the political part that this is could be a play. And, you know, it's not that far-fetched to think that the mayor of Chicago and the president of the United States would not have conversations about how they're going to benefit from a police contract by using the Department of Justice. I mean, is that what you're saying? Like the idea that there's a little bit of politics that's just not, that's behind the scenes that we're not paying attention to?
Oh, I think that there's politics in a lot of things. And rather than throw anyone under the bus and say, I specifically know one thing or another, I think the idea here is we need to have some discussions about how we can best police the city and bring the crime down. Certainly, I've had some suggestions. I want to keep the dialogue open with the city and the police department. I've made some suggestions on simply communicating with the public.
Right.
And one of those was, and it was my first meeting with the superintendent, I said, there is nothing wrong with our officers, while they're working, stopping in the church where it's on their beat, making sure that the people who are going to church, these are generally good people who are interested in their community, knowing that their police are there supporting them, no matter what denomination the church is. And I say church, and I also mean synagogues, mosques,
place of
whatever
worship.
They are.
Right.
I use that as a generic term. I think it's important to know that our police officers are part of the community. They work very hard, and I don't think they've been treated fairly. And I'll give you an example. One of these ideas of the department cracking down on people, we had an officer who was carrying the microphones for the video cameras that are in the cars. And these cars are running 24 hours a day. Eventually, the batteries wore down in the microphones. They went to put them back in the chargers so they could charge them up. They were written up for not carrying the microphones. Well, at some point, you've got to charge these. Mm-hmm. So either they're going to get written up for having dead batteries in the charger or not carrying them. Now, there are solutions there, and I think everybody can say, well, why don't we buy some more batteries? That would help. But the idea is that they are trying to crack down on officers, and unfairly.
It's an interesting. It's interesting because the Department of Justice is the federal government. The federal government regulation, the rules and regulation. We just had a conversation about Title IX and sexual assault on campus and the overreach of government in that area. I mean, it's not. I guess it's not implausible to say that it's the same situation. It may be that the Department of Justice and others want to make the situation better, but how they actually bring the rules down can actually, like you just mentioned, with the microphones be somewhat controversial.
I don't think the police officers are trying to go out there and undermine the law or undermine the department. I think they're faced with a very difficult job. And I will say this, if people think it's so easy, go try it. I guarantee you that the majority of people would not want to even finish the tour of duty.
Well, let's take a break and get an update on tonight's news with Rob. And I'm fascinated. There's a couple of things I want to talk about. One, I mean, violence in Chicago. You mentioned this weekend and days being taken off. I also want to talk about race. A lot of race plays a big part in what we saw in the Department of Justice and the city's commission report. And how that plays in when we talk about policing and if there is a different standard for different neighborhoods in the city of Chicago. Kevin Graham, president of the Fraternal Order of Police, Lodge Number 7, my guest at the big table tonight. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It is the download here on 720 WGN. My guest at the big table tonight, Kevin Graham. He's the president Fraternal Order of Police here in Chicago, Lodge Number 7, just elected to the position, and he will be negotiating with a police contract coming up here at the end of June when it expires with the city of Chicago. You know, as we continue our conversation, we've talked about the contract, and we talked a lot about some of the issues that are surrounding the Chicago police, or just policing in general, not just Chicago. One that always pops up, and it popped up in both reports, the Department of Justice, but the one that was the Police Reform Commission, Lori Lightfoot's, the one that the mayor put together, was pretty, I mean, it said that the department, there are points where there's racism involved, that racism plays a part in how the Chicago Police Department polices its citizens. What do you say to that? Because you've been on the record. I know you did the interview with Mike Fouché saying that you don't think race plays a part in policing at all.
No, I think that the majority of our officers, the vast majority, treat everyone equally. That doesn't mean that you aren't going to find somebody out there that treats people unfairly. I'd be the first to admit that. But what I've seen in more than 30 years of being a police officer is that people are called to a scene and then the police have to make a determination as to what goes on. Usually when they have to make a decision, somebody doesn't like that decision. But that's what they're paid to do. I do think that I am very concerned with our officers on the job who are minorities and making sure they are treated fairly in both promotions and in discipline. I do not want to see anyone treated unfairly because of their skin color, their religion, their sexual orientation, that's unacceptable. We have to always strive to be better, to be fair, and to treat people, whether it is inside the police department or outside mm-hmm. the police department, as fairly as we can. You do have to realize that many of the people we deal with are criminals. They don't want to go back to jail. They say the handcuffs are too tight. They're supposed to be tight. They're handcuffs. We don't want people running away. We need to put them in jail.
I mean, a lot. The only pushback I'd have on that is when there is a Bill of Rights or a Constitution that says this are the things that are afforded to a criminal, someone who is being accused, not even a criminal, just someone in that situation, and a police officer doesn't follow that. And you see that more often. You don't see it. You hear about it. You may see it pop up in the news and other places where that's where the community develops a mistrust or a distrust with the police, where they don't feel like their rights are being upheld.
I think what you see is the aberration and not what is normal, because I think we have great confidence in the police. We trust them to come and do the right job, do it correctly, and be fairly. And I think when they're not fair, or when there is a question about that, people are always willing to say, hey, he didn't treat me fairly, and this is why. And this is why earlier when I said people should sign the complaints sign an affidavit when they want to complain about the police. I don't think there's any people that if a police officer really did something wrong, there's no problem with them saying, he did it wrong, and I'm going to sign the complaint. But that holds everybody accountable.
Right.
It holds people who are making complaints about the police accountable, and it holds the police accountable.
Understood. And I think that the Chicago Police Department and the citizens of this area, especially some areas, I mean, let's talk about the west side of Chicago, Inglewood, some neighborhoods in the south side, they haven't had the greatest relationship.
Sure.
And I'm talking about John Burge. I'm talking about torture claims. No, but I get it. But that could be the aberration. You're right.
Yeah,
but that stuff, when John Burge comes out, you hear a ton of people say, you know what? I had a situation like that. That was similar to something that happened to me. So what happens is you have this sort of, maybe it's an echo chamber. Maybe it's the idea that it's a few people speaking for many. But over and over, you get this idea that just breeds this distrust that if I do sign an affidavit saying this police officer did something to me, it's not going to be the last they hear of it. That there will be some sort of
and point out an instance when that
I can't.
Occurred.
I'm just
exactly.
Okay.
And neither can I.
All right. Okay.
Because it, as far as I know, that just doesn't exist. And there is that myth. I always like to point this out to people. I was just at the police academy yesterday, and I do teach a class on modern policing, yesterday it was about FOP and talking to the members there. But I do tell people, don't lie. Do not lie. It gets you into trouble. And the lie is always worse than the mistake you may have made.
Yeah, that's true in anything.
But
politics, it's sports, anything.
I think, but right? What I want you to remember is, here's a class of police officers who are going to graduate very soon. They know nothing about John Burge. John Burge was gone from this police department before I got here, and I'm eligible for retirement. You know, so I understand why people bring that up, but you've got to remember that the majority of this police department has no idea about John Burge or those things that
but
occur.
You can understand why that breeds distrust, because then you see Holman Square, the piece about a police department that's off the grid. You get, continuous stories in the same thread, and it makes you just kind of. And it's not my community that is raising the concern, but a community here in Chicago that says this is something that happens and no one listens to us.
You know, I've been in and out of Holman Square a dozen times. I don't know more than a dozen times. I've never seen anything unusual. It's a police facility. That's all. There's myths and all kinds of rumors, and they're really baseless. And I don't know other than the fact that people have known me for 30 years and know that I'm always a square shooter. You ask me a question, I'm going to tell you what I think. Which is why I think a lot of our members elected me. Our members are hardworking police officers that go out there every day, and there's no conspiracy. I think there's people who would like there to be a conspiracy. And as I've told you before, can our members make a mistake? Everybody makes mistakes. And we can deal with mistakes too.
The other issue that I just want to bring up, because I'm glad to have you here, and
sure.
And I don't mean any offense or anything of that nature, but there has been a lot around the code of silence and this idea that I've heard you say there is no code of silence. And yet we kind of saw it a little bit in what happened with Laquan McDonald and Officer Van Dyke, where other officers filed reports that weren't necessarily true and were found to be, they were corroborating a story. I mean, there seems to be evidence of a police system-wide sort of idea that you protect your officer regardless of the truth. And what's your response to that?
My response is that's absolutely false. Nobody protects police officers who have committed crimes. That doesn't occur. Okay. Very often what I think people don't understand is they think that one police officer is going to come and handle the entire scene, the entire investigation, the entire evidence gathering, and that's absolutely not true. And so very often, and I like to use an automobile crash because that illustrates it very clearly. You have several vehicles involved. You have a number of officers there that are collecting information. Once in a while, we'll have the wrong VIN number. We'll have the wrong color of the car. Now, if I pass that on to the officer who's writing the report, or he passes on information to me for my section of the report, it will be incorrect. And we will have duplicated our mistakes. And I understand that. There are ways to make that better, which I would share with the department. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that there is not a systemic way of covering anything up. In more than 30 years, I don't know of any police officer who has covered up a crime that another officer has done. So I don't know where this comes from. This code of science. If there's a code, I wish they'd tell me the code because I have no idea what they're talking about. So if somebody out there knows it, and I've said this before, I will say it again. If you know somebody has committed a crime, if you know a police officer, then report it. It's that simple. Report it to the Justice Department. Report it to, there are a number of places you can report these. And so if that's going on, do it. But the reality is that it's a myth. I think people watch a little too much TV.
I had a guest on not too long ago who talked about, and we were talking about policing and community, and they talked about different ways of policing in different communities. When you have a community, let's say Inglewood or other places that have a gang problem, and gangs are shooting, and it's real, and people are dying, and it is the source of the violence numbers that you see in the news every night, that the way that those neighborhoods are policed may be different than the way that you suggested, that walking the beat in Wilson or walking the beat in District 23, whatever it is. The idea that there might be a more militaristic kind of approach to clamping down violence in a neighborhood, which takes away civil liberties and other things, as opposed to the beat cop that's walking down Clark Street.
Well, one of the things I did when I worked in Uptown is I was a substitute school teacher for 2 years in on the same beat in the neighborhood where I was working, which made me very, very familiar with the parents and the children, even as they grew up. You need to invest more in that community. It's not just, it is a matter of communication, but it's not just that. There's people in many of the areas in our city that don't have hope. They don't have hope for jobs. They don't have hopes for a career. And they don't see themselves succeeding in life. That is not a problem that the police can solve by themselves. That is a problem that society has to work on. And many of the youth out there do not have mentors. And unfortunately, they see the police as staying away from the police because they don't want to go to jail. They don't want to be seen around the police. And these are solid people in the community. And so that's really a disservice to the department and to the city and to the people that live in that community.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, this is a long time ago. I had a police officer call in and he talked about that, you know, there used to be more trust between the community and police officers, even to the fact that the way the police officer was viewed, or in this case, he was talking about a family, a 3-year-old is out in the yard and the police officer walks by on the beat and the mom goes, "Don't get too close to him or you're going to jail." And this idea that there was this negative stereotype of the police officer that you want to stay away from the police at all costs. They're not part of your community. They're there to throw you in jail. Is that, I mean, do you agree with that, that deterioration of communities and police and not that this idea that they're not one, that they're two?
I know what you're saying. And certainly there are people out there like that. I do not believe that is the majority of the people. The majority of the people all over the city want the police in their neighborhood. They want to be talked to and treated fairly. And that is part of it. The other part is that the police deal, I always tell this to people, between 2 and 3% of the crime is committed. All the crime is committed by 2 or 3% of the population. That means that almost 97% of the population is going about their lives trying to make their lives better, their families better, trying to put something more on the table. And unfortunately, the police deal with the majority of what they deal with is that 2 and 3%. And so in consequence, it is certainly difficult when you are dealing with people who are hardcore criminals, then to transition back to people who are just asking you questions.
Yeah.
And that can be difficult, but one of the training classes that they have going on in the police department is going to be dealing with just that.
My last question tonight.
Okay.
And it's a political one. In the way that we saw in the city of Chicago as demographics and voting totals came out, it was interesting to see that a majority of the people who voted for Donald Trump lived in areas like Mount Greenwood, Blue Island, other places where police and fire are usually at. And essentially what we heard from the media afterwards is that police officers and officers of the law in all forms voted for Donald Trump regardless of party affiliation. They're not Republicans, they're not Democrats. They just thought they wanted to go with a law and order president over the path. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that the majority of officers in this country voted for Donald Trump?
Well, first of all, Donald Trump sought out the endorsement of the National Fraternal Order of Police. That is not the Chicago Lodge 7. That is the National Lodge. And we could spend a whole show about how that goes into play. Hillary Clinton, Secretary Clinton, did not seek out our endorsement and has not been warm to the police. I don't know who you would vote for if somebody doesn't appear to care for you and somebody does. I think that's probably a large part of it.
Mm-hmm.
The ideas about the two candidates and getting outside of law enforcement, you need somebody on this show
right.
who knows a little bit more about that than me, and I wouldn't even get into it. But certainly I think that was probably the impetus between going further with Donald Trump than with Hillary. I think it was just a matter of how they treated the police.
Well, we're out of time, and I want to continue the conversation. You're welcome to come back at any time. I enjoyed talking to you. Kevin Graham, the president of the Chicago Fraternal Order of Police, Lodge Number 7. The police contract is up at the end of June, and the negotiations will begin soon. We look forward to the negotiations and to seeing what happens with the contract for the Chicago Police. Mr. Graham, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.